and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I tuned in to the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
This is Tim and Friends for May 26, 2022. That was Jesse Rubinoff. I am Tim McAuliffe. You are the friends. Game 5, Battle of Alberta, coming your way right here on Sportsnet. Same with Game 5s of the Rangers and Canes, as well as the Warriors and Mavs, all in the Sportsnet family of channels. The NBA's Western Conference Final can be seen in Sportsnet 360 as game day always starts right here on Tim and Friends. We, of course, will get you the latest news and information surrounding all of those games. And today, even with the Battle of Alberta taking over the second hour, too sweet to be sour, we've got some real basketball coming your way over the next 30 to 40 minutes. That's right, kids. Not only is Raptors and Team Canada head coach Nick Nurse going to join us in about 8 minutes' time, but also one of the most highly recruited prospects in Canadian history, Elijah Fisher. He is going to make his college announcement right here on the show within the hour. The quick Google search can tell you top five down to Memphis, Louisville, Missouri, Texas Tech, and Kentucky, which are kind of the schools that come knocking when you jump on the scene in like grade eight and or score 75 points in a damn good high school league like he did last year. It is a Tim and Sid / Tim and Friends first. We get a decision day from Elijah Fisher coming up in less than a half an hour's time. At Jeep Principe, Ryan Leslie and Dominic Moore on the Battle of Alberta and the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think we got a show unlike any other in Canada, period, exclamation point. And we kick off the 2 hours of edutainment with Jesse Rubinoff and First Things First. So to quote Kellen Wayne Barra, who reached out on IG with this suggestion, give us our fix, haha, Clinton Dix.
Unbelievable. One of the best handles in NFL history, I might say. He's not still playing, is he?
No, he's out of the league. And I think the last time I used haha Clinton Dix,
we went over this.
You did the same thing. We went over
that's
the
his
same
nickname.
Thing.
That's not his real name.
Yeah.
No, I got it. I'm sorry. You said Elijah Fisher scored 75 points.
75 points.
In a game. Like, I couldn't even score 75 points on my driveway alone.
You couldn't score 75 on Super Nintendo and or Sega Genesis. No. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this.
Unbelievable.
50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa.
Nice. Look at you today. All right, let's get going here because we don't have much time before Nick Nurse shows
up. Yeah, Nick Nurse, about 7 minutes.
Game 5 of the Battle of Alberta goes tonight in Calgary at 7:30 local time, 9:30 Eastern on Sportsnet and CBC. The Oilers have won 3 straight games and can advance to the conference finals for the first time since 2006 with a win tonight. What is the key for the Flames to keep their season going?
If you had told me before the series that Jacob Markstrom would have series stats of a 528 goals against average and an 850 save percentage, and that the Oilers would have scored 4 or more goals in every game this series, I would have very politely asked you to shut your pie hole. There's no shot that that's happening. But here we are, and he flat out needs to steal one here. Their stars have to be stars, and we can walk down the road of the 40-goal scorers in the first line, but I think it all starts with Jacob Markstrom, because if you're giving up 4 or more every game in the postseason, you're asking too much of everybody. Defense has to be better. Jacob Markstrom has to be better.
Are you buying into the fatigue factor, perhaps, from Jacob Markstrom? 74 games played. You look on the other side, Mike Smith, nowhere close to that. He was hurt for a big chunk of the season, so maybe he's a little bit more rested. Are you giving any credit to the fatigue?
I do believe a bit of that, but also you have a Vezina-caliber goalie there. Yeah. And you've seen that in other places where guys have played a lot of time. But guess who played more games than Jacob Markstrom?
Mm-hmm.
Andre Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm. He's okay.
He's been pretty good. He's been pretty good over the last little while. So listen, it's obvious that the Oilers are doing something that troubles both Markstrom and the defense. This side-to-side thing, this moving back and forth, their speed down low is giving them problems. The Flames have never won a series after trailing 3-1. They are going to have to change that if they want to move through. And the rest of Canada, outside of Edmonton and oil country, are desperately praying for 7. So to get there, I think it's got to be Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah.
and their defense being better, because you know me, I never blame it completely on the goalie.
Yeah, I mean, you're just...
Unless you score from 132.
Right, right. But, you know, you can't win, or it's going to be very hard to win with a goals against average over 5 in a series. And because it is the Battle of Alberta, and we have been giving hoodies away for the last couple of games, tonight, ahead of Game 5, we'll be sending out a tweet shortly. You hashtag TFPredict. Predict the correct score to win an I'm a Friend hoodie, courtesy of us here at Tim and Friends. Let's get it trending again today. We've been trending pretty high on the numbers the last couple of times we've done this. So congratulations to those who have won so far. Couch GM, the
try to do my Vanna White here.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Actually, this is
you do a good modeling
better.
Job.
Yeah, it's probably better that way.
No.
Yeah, covering my fat head.
Good job by Sebby, too. That's a nice zoom, Sebby. Well done. Okay, we got a lot more coming up with the Battle of Alberta, but we got to move on because, again,
Nick Nurse
coming up. What a game in Colorado last night with the Blues facing elimination. They came back from 3-0 down to tie the game at 3 before Nathan MacKinnon gave the Avs a lead again late in the third period. We use the term end-to-end a lot. This was a legit end-to-end goal to complete the hat trick, but St. Louis answered again with Robert Thomas tying the game with less than a minute to go, and then Tyler Bozak scored the OT winner as the Blues force a Game 6 back in St. Louis. How in the good name of Bernie Federko are the Blues doing this, Timmy?
Nice. I appreciate the Bernie Federko reference. They're fighting. These are harder. This is Rudy Tomjanovich time, right? He's the one that said never underestimate the heart of a champion. Yep. Like, they had no business winning that game last night.
No. They did play a good third period, but you would think.
No business.
No.
They're down 3-0. Connor Hughes.
Well, it looked a lot like him.
Yeah. 40 instead there. You see MacKinnon score a goal like that to go up 4-3. It's supposed to be done. He's got the hat trick. Like, this is the icing on the cake. The goal was absolutely ridiculous at high speed, short side roof. This is supposed to be jam done.
Yeah.
The St. Louis Blues, without two defensemen, two of their better defensemen, without Binnington standing on their head, they're not supposed to be anywhere near this. And listen, the pressure has now shifted on Colorado immensely, and we'll see how they respond because they are supposed to be the team. This is their adversity. Here is their kick in the mouth. How do they respond going back to St. Louis, where obviously it's going to be a hostile barn? Mm-hmm. This is, I expected more from Kemper. I thought he should be better. That goal by Bozak at the end, you got to stop. Some things like this happen. But I said to you, like, sometimes, and it's unfair, but sometimes I have to see a goalie do it before I believe in them. It worked with Bobrovsky because I haven't seen him do it in the postseason, and he didn't do it again. And Kemper, I haven't seen do it in the postseason. And he had a tough injury, but I need to see more than that. Like, in a key time like this, I think the Avs are going to get through, and I'm not going out on a limb here, but they're going to be tested now. They got a little bit of adversity here.
Yeah, I want to put you on the spot quickly, very quickly. Nate MacKinnon's goal in the playoffs or... the Connor McDavid, I know he's done it a couple times this season, but the Rangers one, that's going around on the socials, is do you prefer one versus the other? I know MacKinnon's is the playoffs.
Yeah, and you the timing. And yeah. Like, if you're just talking about aesthetic beauty, I don't know if it's there, but it's aesthetic beauty, the timing, the situation, like, all of that makes that a great goal.
Sick.
But I think you're adding a little too much to the equation. It might be two apples and oranges. I know what you're saying.
Like, McDavid was disgusting. Like, just, the stick handling in the phone booth. Like,
right. But part
on.
Of what makes this amazing is the timing.
Yes.
Which is unfair to McDavid's goal because it's not the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the NBA. The Celtics took a 3-2 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals with a 93-80 victory over the Heat. Last night, Boston trailed at halftime, but went on a 24-2 run in the second half to take control. You said yesterday, Timmy, it's been all about the runs in the postseason. How ugly was last night's game before that 24-2 run, or even with that 24-2 run?
That game was so ugly, it couldn't arouse suspicion. You know what I'm talking about? That game was uglier than homemade soap. We've done this before.
We did last week.
We did this before. Yeah. Wait a second here. When do I guarantee a win?
Yeah.
I never do that. Well, that was Sid's thing, guaranteed win night. And he'd throw it out there at the end of the show. And if it worked, he'd come back the next day and he'd raise the roof. He would come in here and, like, raise the roof and act like he knew all along. Mm-hmm. And then if it didn't work out, he would slink back underneath the desk and never bring it up again. You know me. I don't often say this. I put my money where my mouth was last night and guaranteed a Celtics win because they're healthier than the Miami Heat. And it took a little while to get going, and who knew that Derek White, 6 of 8 for 14 points, would end up being the hero off the bench for the Seas. But lo and behold, that's exactly where we are. Does it not feel like this is the Celtics series to lose, given the injuries to a lot of Kyle Lowry hate out there, too, and a trip to the Bahamas being brought up? Like, yeah. Very, very interesting stuff surrounding this series now that Miami's on the ropes. And it feels like they're kind of tearing at each other now. Why that would come up in the media like a month later, to me, is kind of puzzling.
It's weird. I mean, I guess people are looking at the statistics, and the statistics are quite bad. Last night, together with Max Strus, Kyle Lowry and Max Strus, worst playoff showing for a starting backcourt since the NBA began tracking starters in 1970. They were 0 for 15 combined from the field.
1 for 28 in the last two games.
You're not going to win many games when they play like that. And again, the story
is... Lowry's been banged up, and he's not that young, right? Like...
Yeah, I think you had to know in some level what you were signing up for when you acquired Kyle Lowry. He probably wasn't going to be the same player, and they're not as healthy. I mean, that's what it comes down to. He hasn't been playing with much frequency in this postseason, and when you're of that age, I don't know, I can't do the same things.
36.
I'm not that old, and I can't do the same things that I used to when I...
You're not 36?
Not 36, no.
You're not 36?
That's a W for me. I'm not 36, no.
Where are you at?
33.
Oh, are you 33?
Yeah. You didn't know this? I feel like you asked me this every...
We were talking about it before.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Like, you're 88. I know that.
Yeah. Like, you just can't do the same things that you were once able to, and that's fine. Yeah. But when you are consistently out of the lineup, it's hard for you to get back up to speed.
Yeah, yeah. People are asking him to be the Kyle Lowry of 2 years ago, and he's injured, and he's 2 years older. And that 88 in my head made me wonder, like, do you remember the SI cover in 1994 that was rather famous in Canada? Mm-hmm. Because it said,
controversial,
why the NHL's hot and the NBA's not, which to a legion, a generation of sports fans, you couldn't even comprehend how in the good name of Mark Messier you could have a cover like that. However, watching these NBA playoffs and watching the NHL playoffs, like, you could bring that cover back right now.
No question. No question. Every NHL game feels like it's tight.
Last night alone, right? Like, you thought, okay, Colorado's going to blow them out. It's 3-0. You get overtime.
This is the difference in the NHL, though. There have been games that you would think are on the track to being a blowout. Like, yeah. 2 nights ago, we had the Oilers go up 3-0. And then what do you know? The Flames tie it up. Mm. Last night, the Avs go up 3-0. The Blues tie it up. But in basketball, it's these runs that are just turning the games into a blowout, and they never recover.
So let me ask you a question, because you brought up to me that it was a three-pointer, and I wondered if the three-pointer could also bring teams back, because, like, obviously they're shooting three-pointers at ridiculous numbers right now, and that allows you to build leads, which was a great point by you. And I said, well, wouldn't that allow you to bring it back? Did you not read an article? You came
I
in
did.
Here with chest out saying, hey, Tim, you read The Athletic or what? I'm like, yeah, I got a membership. And how come the membership is so much more expensive when you renew it? But whatever. I don't know. This is two different things that we're talking about here. But what? So what happened here? What happened in The Athletic?
Well, I mean, I don't have all the stats in front of me. But what I did read was that, and I made sure of the timestamp. This was after yesterday's show. So this was actually printed today.
Well, so maybe they were watching.
Maybe they were watching. Mm. A lot of the stats do support the fact that because teams are taking so many more threes, and you see a team like the Mavericks, for example, you watch the Mavs and the Celtics, too, they are just taking like 35 threes a game. Mm-hmm. And when you do that and you are making them, that makes it very difficult for the team you're playing, especially a team like Miami when they get cold like this.
Yeah.
That's going to become a blowout very, very quickly. And that's what we're seeing.
Well, we got two teams that can really shoot it tonight, Mavs and Warriors. That's on Sportsnet 360. We'll have that for you. Listen, Nick Nurse was going to join us at around 10 past the hour.
Busy man.
He is a busy man. We haven't got him yet. So what we're going to do is take the quick break.
All right.
When we come back, we hope to have Nick Nurse. We also hope to have Eliza Fisher, who is going to make his college choice right here on Tim and Friends within the hour. Stay tuned. Battle of Alberta, we got you covered. Welcome back to Tim and friends, okay, so Nick Nurse is a busy dude. This is live TV. These things happen every once in a while. There's an 18-year-old young man who's going to tell us what university he is going to. He is one of the most highly recruited players in the history of Canada. We are not going to move his announcement from 5:30. So here's what we'll do. We'll wait to see if we can catch up with Nick Nurse. We will find it, but we're not moving the 18-year-old kid's decision. Jesse, let's talk a little soccer and some breaking news surrounding what was kind of controversial from the start from Canada.
You're right. So Canada Soccer announced today that they have canceled their upcoming friendly against Iran amidst growing criticism over the decision to schedule the match in the first place. The game was set for June 5th at BC Place in Vancouver. Now, 55 Canadians and 30 permanent residents were among the 176 people killed when Iranian forces shot down a commercial airplane in 2020. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was said it was a bad idea to invite the Iranians. So was today's decision inevitable, Timmy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was. John Wertheim and I were having the sport washing conversation just yesterday, right? Like he came on the show and we had the exact same thing. And how this can be such a weird and arbitrary line. I mean, like, think of it this way. Playing Iran in Vancouver, no. Potentially playing Iran in a bot World Cup in stadiums built under remarkably unsafe conditions that some compared to slave labor. Have at it, Haas. Like, this is what we're going to do moving forward in the world right now. Like, I know Iran's terrible human rights record pretty well. I know we need way more answers on Flight 752 and that the Iranian government took innocent lives. I know that Canada Soccer probably should have sorted all this out before setting the idea. But if Justin Trudeau needs Canada Soccer to make statements on things like this on his behalf, like, we got a bigger problem in this country. Like, every step of this, there were mistakes made, but it's such a slippery slope that we're on right now. And I get sport is used by terrible people to wash the terrible things that they are doing. Heck, this is the year of sport washing. An Olympics in Beijing, the Russian kind of sort of boycotts, and we're bookending it all with a World Cup in Qatar. Like, we were pitching a sport washing story for this show because we knew that this was the year where we were going to see all this come to a head. Sport does play a role in washing or looking past terrible human rights records, but sport also has the power to unite and humanize all of us like nothing else on planet Earth. You're never going to have it both ways. Like, call me naive, but I try and cheer for the good in all this, and it just sucks that Canada made this decision to play Iran, and now they don't have an opponent. Now, reportedly, Iran is suing the Canadian Soccer Federation for $10 million. Yeah. That breaking in the last little while, though it was reported by the Irani National News Agency, state-run media. So, like, where we're at here is Canada loses out, and the boys that had so much momentum building towards a World Cup are left holding the bag. Because there are even reports out there that they were having conversations with themselves on whether or not they would play the game. Wow. It's just a bad decision here by a lot of people. And for me, like, if you need the Canadian Soccer Association to send your messages, Justin Trudeau, we've gone a little bit too far here.
I know you read a lot about sport washing, and I know it's been around forever. I don't really expect you to have an answer to this question, but I feel like you said this was the year of sports washing. I feel like there's been a resurgence that we haven't seen in a very long time.
Yeah, because there are certain things that capitalistic societies, like putting on the Olympics, no one wants to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, there aren't cities and countries lining up to spend that kind of money. And the cities and countries that are doing it, vast majority, are ones that have the money that they're not giving to their citizens to use on things like stadiums that you'll never use again. So, I mean, obviously Putin has done it, China has done it, and we're in a spot where Qatar is doing it. And it's too bad because every good thing bad people use, right? And it shouldn't take away from the good thing.
No question. Canada Soccer just released it looks like a statement. I'm going to read that statement.
Okay, so this was just released a little while ago. Producers are telling me,
like,
and Jesse's pulling it up.
Literally right now.
As we speak, because again, okay. This is live TV, the kind of live TV that loses us Nick Nurse in the moment, but we're not messing with the 18-year-old kid.
No.
I'm telling you that right now, okay?
No.
Elijah Fisher is making his announcement here on the show. So what did Canada Soccer
say?
Okay,
so here's the statement. It's a little long, but bear with me. I'll speed read through this. So Canada Soccer has the best intentions in striving to ensure that the men's national team gains important experience against FIFA World Cup teams in preparation for Qatar 2022. Over the past week, the untenable geopolitical situation of hosting Iran became significantly divisive, and in response, the match was canceled. While we considered the external factors in selecting the optimal opponent in our original decision-making process, we will strive to do better moving forward. Canada Soccer will be conducting a thorough review of our processes for the hosting of international matches to ensure no stone is left unturned in our pursuit of excellence, both on and off the pitch, including consultation with all stakeholders. We are committed to creating respectful and inclusive environments for teams, players, and fans. We are working diligently to find an alternative opponent, and all ticket purchases have been notified that the event has been canceled and that a refund is on its way. I almost made it through the whole thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of spin in there, and I get why you were. I mean, would you expect anything else? I mean, that's what you, when something like this happens, that's what you write. And it's just tough, right? You know, I thought that they probably should have done a better job in thinking this one through. And they probably thought, listen, there's a lot of Iranian citizens in Canada. They might help us fill up BC Place. We might sell some tickets.
Yeah.
This might be fun. And instead, you end up here because you didn't do the due diligence.
And there's a lot of eyes on Canada Soccer now. So maybe mistakes that otherwise would have gone under the radar
again,
a little bit, that's not going to happen anymore.
And again, this needs to be something that helps get a team with a ton of momentum set for a World Cup, and they might not be able to find an opponent.
Totally. Okay, let's shift gears and go to the Toronto Blue Jays here.
Italy doing anything right now?
Nice. The Blue Jays open a four-game series in Anaheim tonight. Shohei Ohtani will get the start for the Angels against Hyunjin Ryu. The Jays scored 8 runs Tuesday against the Cardinals. It was the first time in 9 games that the Jays scored more than 3 runs. Do you think they can keep it going against Shohei? Why are you giggling?
First, I thought you were going to say Ohtani, and then I was kind of waiting for the Ohtani, and then I realized he's just going Shohei.
He's
one word name.
Yeah, there you go, like Ronaldo.
I got you. Rob Wong tweeted out earlier today the right-handed hitting slashes against Shohei Ohtani, and like he just pooped on the parade immediately. Right-handed hitters slashing 113, 149, 155 against Shohei Ohtani this season. Good luck to the Toronto Blue Jays. So this will be a test for the Toronto Blue Jays against Shohei Ohtani, to say the least. So if they want to prove that maybe, in fact, that game against the Cardinals was the start of something, Shohei Ohtani is the guy to do it against. And the door might be open here. A lot of Yankees injuries. This could be a real time for the Jays. And to start against Shohei Ohtani, no better way to start, Jesse, than Shohei Ohtani. Would I bet on it? Probably not. We have got the latest news and analysis on Game 5's Battle of Alberta, Rangers and Canes with Dominic Moore, Mark Spector, and Eric Francis, and the latest on Canadian soccer all coming up. We'll see if we get any more news. But up next, he is the latest 5-star recruit from our home and native land. A 75-point performance in a top-tier high school basketball league. We'll do it. We'll find out where Elijah Fisher is going to college next, right here on Tim and Friends.
Lucian Brock scores! Oilers have a 3-1 series lead.
Maybe our guys are doing all they can. Maybe Edmonton's just doing a little bit better right now.
Blue Jays bats had to come out of it at some point, and they decided to do it before they hit the West Coast.
Hyunjin Ryu against Shohei Ohtani.
Barzell walks in, waits, feeds it across, but he scores! Drake Batherson has won it for Canada!
You can't make no mistakes. You make a mistake, you gotta keep your head up, keep it going. And basketball-wise, it's just to be a better player the next day. I want to look back and say, every day I got better. Every day I became a better player.
Back in the day when I was a little youth, Canadian basketball player got a scholarship. It was a big deal. Think about it. The greatest player that this country has ever produced got one. One single scholarship offer, and it was from Santa Clara. Man, have times changed. Big schools, big names, high picks. The latest in what has become a long line of five-star recruits is this young man, Elijah Fisher, whose name hardcore basketball fans have known from, I don't know, like grade 7 or 8. And Elijah has blessed us with his highly anticipated decision day. I got to ask you, welcome to Tim and Friends, first off. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. I know mom and dad are waiting in the wings. Love to see this. I know it's a tight family. Brother, one of many brothers is here as the youngest of four boys. I know what it's like to grow up in a big family household, so I'm glad to have you guys here as well. Listen, shortlist, people know it. You can Google it. Final five, if you will. Memphis, Louisville, Missouri, Texas Tech, and Kentucky. So, my dude, are you ready to do this?
Yes, sir, for sure.
All right. I present to you one of the most highly recruited Canadian kids that we have seen. And as you saw, these days, that means something. I present to you Elijah Fisher, Decision Day.
Elijah's one of those once-in-a-generation type players.
Elijah Fisher, find the lane.
His mentality is high level.
Elijah, that's a rebound.
This isn't about me. This is about everyone that has supported me up to this day. I wouldn't be here without my parents. I wouldn't be here without my brothers. And most importantly, I wouldn't be here without God. I want to thank my coaches, my trainers, my mentors, and all the programs I played for, and everyone else that has helped me get to where I am today. It's been hard for me to see myself as the next this or that. I see myself as one of one, to have my own style, my own uniqueness, my own legacy. I would like to say I'm committed to the University of Texas Tech. Go Red Raiders.
Yeah. Here we go. So why was Texas Tech and Coach Mark Adams right for you?
Well, they're right for me just because I felt like it was another family. I felt like it was a family away from my family. I felt like everyone there understood me and welcomed me with open arms into the Texas Tech family.
Awesome. And when I hear the word family, the research that I did always goes back to family for you guys. So let's bring in mom and dad here, Tilia and Rohan, along with brother Jai. Let me just ask, how are we feeling?
Excited for him.
Yeah. So why was Coach and Texas Tech right for your family?
I mean, when we met Coach Adams, it was just a warm embrace, and he just kind of, I felt his aura. I knew he was the right coach for Elijah. He loved him like it was his own. Yeah. And they just welcomed him with open arms. As he said, it felt like family, so the puzzle piece fit.
Right. Mom, Tilia, listen, this is not a drive to Don Mills and Crestwood Prep. This is not a drive to even Scarborough. This is Lubbock, Texas. It's a bit of a ways away. Are you okay with this?
You know. We talk about it, and like they've been preparing me for it, but yeah, it's not a drive down the street. He is going away, but I'm happy where he's going. I know that he'll be in great hands with Texas Tech, Mark Adams, the team there. So I'm excited for him.
All right.
Well, I'll be there every.
You'll be there a bit? You'll be there a bit?
Every weekend.
That's awesome. Yeah. Can we talk some ball then?
Yes, sir, for sure.
I know it's been a while since I hosted the NCAA tournament in this country, but Coach Adams runs like a pro-style, dare I say, Warriors-like offense. Is that something that attracted you to Lubbock?
Well, yeah, and then a lot of defense. The defense really attracted me because they have great defense. I feel like it's a great discipline for me to learn and understand so I can move on to the next level.
I love hearing that. It's not often you hear kids saying, talking about defense. I love that you stayed at home in Canada for high school, and I think it's so important that to have your family with you in these important steps in life. And the quality of ball in Canada is getting so much better from when I was in high school. What did the high school, which, by the way, is down the street from me at Crestwood, how did it prepare you for this moment and where you're going forward?
Well, it prepared me a lot on the court and off the court. Well, off the court, it just prepared me, like, with the education that they had, it helped me grasp as a student, become a better student, to understand just the little things. And then on the court, it really helped me understand the little details that, okay, you need to box out here, you need to do this. You need to be able to communicate with everyone for outside world life purposes and on the court purposes.
If you were talking to another youngster who is coming up the same way, would you suggest to them to stay at home? Like, it feels like having family around you was important.
Well, for me, what I went through, I was just staying at home because I felt like staying at home really helped me a lot. It really showed me that family really means a lot, that without family, that you're nothing, it's nothing.
Did you talk to any other players about your decision?
Not really. I didn't talk to any other players. I really felt like I should keep it a secret and really show the world.
Nice. I know you played for Canada's U19 World Cup squad as a 17-year-old with guys like Zach Edey, Purdue, now the draft, Benedict Mathurin, lottery pick, Caleb Houston, Olivier Maxence Prosper, who's at Marquette, Ryan Nemhard, who ball fans know. Did that experience give you confidence that you can play at this next level?
That gave me a lot of confidence. I felt like going into practice is always 100 miles per hour. You can't make no mistakes. If you make a mistake, you got to keep your head up, keep it going. You're going to be good. You got the next one. So I felt like it really helped me make this decision, knowing that I can play at the next level.
Did seeing them have success in their freshman years give you a little bit of confidence?
For sure. It gave me a lot of confidence knowing that they can go in the same situation that I was in and able to go in and kill and do their things and have a positive mindset. So I feel like I can do the same thing.
Awesome. This could be a mini Team Canada, right? Like, I don't know if you know about Fardaz Amik, who withdrew from the NBA draft.
It could be.
Vancouver dude joining a Toronto or Oshawa kid. Did you know much about the other Canadian that committed here?
I didn't really know much, but once I figured out that he committed and I was already locked in, I felt like it was a great decision for both of us because we were able to bond and become one.
Awesome. I'm old enough to remember when Denham Brown scored 111 for West Hill. And your 75 for Crestwood was the most since Denham's 111. I might argue, if Denham's watching, that you might have had tougher competition. But what was it like? What was the zone like to hit 75 in a game?
It was crazy going through my mind knowing that I'm just scoring the ball. Like, I really thought I wasn't doing well. And then my coach told me with like 5 minutes left in the game, he says, you have 40. You need to pick it up and do some more. I was like, okay, I got you. And then I started killing.
24 of 40, so you're 60% from the floor. You're 8 of 15, over 50% from threes. What's it feel? I have no idea what it feels like. So what's it feel like when the rim is that big?
It feels great. It feels amazing. It feels like anything could go in.
So what are the goals at Texas Tech? What are the goals for you as a basketball player, as a student, and beyond?
Well, as a student, it's to get a great education, to be able to tell my mom that I graduated. I did what I needed to do to make my mom proud.
And she liked that answer.
And she loved it.
And then basketball-wise?
And basketball-wise is just to be a better player the next day. I want to look back and say, every day I got better. Every day I became a better player.
What's next for you? Is it Canada U18s again?
Yes, are
you
sir.
You're going to play with Canada?
U18s.
Nice. And that's in Tijuana?
Mexico, yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Listen, on behalf of ball fans in this country, we want to wish you the best. You always got an open door here whenever you want to come by. An official friend of the show. And I guess we just finished with Breckham, right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Elijah Fisher, everybody.
Yes, sir.
And speaking of Canadian basketball, a reminder, Global Jam coming to Canada this summer. The event features four star-studded men's and women's international teams competing in the tournament, with the week-long festivities July 5th to 10th in downtown Toronto. For more information and tickets, basketball.ca/globaljam. Could Elijah play? Check it out. Time for a break. We'll keep talking hoops next. Hoping to catch up with Raptors and Canada head coach Nick Nurse. If he's available, if the phone works, we'll do that next right here on Tim and Friends. Then Battle of Alberta it out. In our final hour, Too Sweet to Be Sad. It's Tim and Friends. World Hockey Championship action, Sweden and Canada. And of course, Jesse, worried after the loss to Denmark.
Was stressed, yeah.
A lot of people worried after the loss to Denmark, and they were down 3-0 in this one in the third period. Ryan Graves' point shot gets past Linus Allmark, cuts the 3-1. What does that mean? Nothing, right? Under two to go. Canada power play, pull the goalie. Oh, Pierre-Luc Dubois, as you heard Gord Miller say on the one-timer. 3-2. Nah, you can't come back, right, Canada? 30 seconds later, Canada's net still empty. Matt Barzal, backhand, just crosses the line. Yes, he ties the game. We're going to OT. In OT, Drake Batherson on the rush. William Nylander takes away his chance at glory. 2 minutes, Canada goes on the power play. And guess what? Batherson still gets his glory. Off the no-look feed, one time ball, Jingda Twine. Four straight goal for Canada, and they advance to the semis with a huge 4-3 comeback, down 3-0 going into the third period of play. They come back.
I am relieved.
You good?
I'm relieved.
Good. Is Nick Nurse good? Not yet.
Not yet?
Nick Nurse is not good. So the William Nylander slander rhymes. I understand it. We had heard it throughout this tournament that he was playing with a more aggressive style of play and that he was kicking it up for Sweden, who he's been a world championship MVP for in the past. Was there something there, or just Leaf fans pissed as they watched the Tampa Bay Lightning cruise through a second-round sweep of the Florida Panthers?
I don't think you're... eyes were lying to you. I think I don't know if it's fair to be upset about watching William Nylander throw his body around like he is a completely different player playing for Sweden. But
was it a completely different player?
Oh, or
was
five it just body a role? Checks. Five body checks in one shift is a completely different player. And I mean, you see what he did here. And this obviously, I mean, this is one shift that was highlighted a billion different times by, incited by Leaf fans everywhere. William Nylander's soft. He's not willing to do what it takes in the playoffs. That's one moment. But he showed against Sweden, or with Sweden, that he is willing to sacrifice.
Hold on. So is it not a difference, though? Because I saw the Twitter reel.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That was against Latvia.
I know.
Is it a little bit different, Latvia versus the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I think it's incredibly different.
Did he not just have 7 points in seven? I just feel like it's people who were not Nylander fans saying the "I told you Nylander sucks."
There's two camps, right? It's like can he bring that to the Toronto Maple Leafs? That's number one, right?
Yep.
Or what is the reason behind him playing like this with Sweden and not with the Maple Leafs?
Or is it just Latvia?
Could be just Latvia.
All right. It's not often we shuffle everything around. Also not often the head coach of the Toronto Raptors and Canada basketball is made available. So without further ado, from your humble narrator, I present Nick Nurse. Welcome back to Tim and Friends, Coach. How are things?
Hey, I'm available all the time. What are you talking about?
Wow.
How you doing?
Wow. Listen.
I'm a big fan of the show. I'll come on all the time. Come on, Tim.
I appreciate it. You do give us a ton of time. I was just breaking them for the little bit of a mistiming on all this. But listen, I want to talk.
That was all my fault. That was all my fault, man.
Bleep happens, Coach.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that at all. There's a famous movie around hockey heads in this country. It's called Youngblood. Have you ever heard of the movie Youngblood?
I have, yes. Yeah. And I've seen it. But it's been a long time since I've seen it.
So Patrick Swayze is one of the lead characters in Youngblood. He won't watch hockey if he's not playing. It's supposed to be his competitive nature. I'm competitive. I watch everything, but I'm not a pro athlete or pro coach. Are you like Patrick Swayze in Youngblood and you can't watch once you're done? Or are you watching the games that we're seeing right now?
I'm on the spectrum towards not watching much. I can't say I don't watch at all. I made it to the first timeout last night of the Heat Boston game.
First time.
And I just was like, I'm going to, they were both like 2-for-14 from the field and all of them looked like they could barely run up and down the floor. So I was like, I'm going to go do something else. Maybe go watch the Cubs or something. Anyway, I also, I was stuck in traffic. Missed the, you know, don't get stuck in traffic during these playoffs is what I've been telling people. I was racing home the other night. I turned that game on. It was 18-1. I was like, geez, I just I missed the whole game because I didn't get home 10 minutes sooner. You know what I mean? So I'm not watching much.
It seems like blowout after blowout. And I asked the question because, I mean, there's obviously some frustration on how your season ended. And I'm not sure that many folks had this team for 48 wins this year. But did you feel like you had more left than that first round with Philly?
Well, I certainly thought we could beat them or figure out a way to beat them, Tim. I would really like to go back to 0-0 and start again.
Right.
I just think we got so discombobulated in those first couple, 2.5 games with Gary was a total non-factor, you know, because he was so sick. And when, you know, looking back hindsight, I wish I wouldn't have played him. I didn't want to play him in game two. And anyway, and then Scotty goes down and Thad goes down, and we just weren't going to beat him with that kind of start and just kind of handing them those first two games. You know, it was already going to be tough, you know, to try to get them. But then, you know, I thought we found some spot. I know, I think we got them worried, and I think they had to play a great game to finally eliminate us. I don't know. I'm disappointed with the way it ended, like everybody else. We did show some, I think, flashes of some brilliance in there at some point, but just not quite enough in the end.
So let me ask you, because I think a lot of Raptor fans are trying to figure out what they just saw over the year. Like, how close does it feel to you?
Well, I think that, you know, the way I feel like this, I feel like at the beginning of this season, Tim, I was concerned. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really voicing that. I was concerned. We felt really, really young. I mean, we were, right? But we felt even younger. Like, I just felt like, man, these guys got a lot of growth here to get to being able to defend the way we want, execute our schemes, you know, figure out kind of the pecking order on offense and move, you know. But they really grew quickly. Like, all of a sudden, we were guarding the way we wanted to guard, like, you know, pretty quickly. Like, we went from nowhere to somewhere in, like, 6 or 8 weeks. And all of a sudden, I was like, okay, now these guys, this is going to be fun now because we got some energy, we got some length, and now they're starting to understand, you know, when to send the double, when to make it hard on a certain star player, how to rotate, how to just keep playing through every possession, how to chase down loose balls. And I think we got back to, you know, what I always say, can we go play harder than our opponent and give ourselves a chance? And if we do, we have nothing to hang our heads about. And when you do that, usually we're going to start racking up some wins, or we're at least going to have some win streaks, or we're going to win more than we lose, or whatever that is, no matter who we run out there. And then the second thing is, I think they battled through a ton of guys being out, and we weren't very deep.
Yeah.
So we were having to make shift, you know, 2-3 guys out. It's not like we're plugging in, you know, we weren't plugging in guys that hadn't really played in the league before. So that is another credit to probably our main guys, that they could kind of adjust their roles, you know, week to week, 10 days to 10 days, depending on who was in and out. So pretty happy with that, too.
Right. That part there, and I kept talking about on the show about the balance of having to play Pascal and Freddie heavy minutes to get wins, get Freddie on an all-star team, too, as well. But I also said in the show that I wondered if you leaned on them too much. I may have even been critical of you, Coach. And I don't want to be the guy saying on the show one thing, then you come on and I somehow completely forget the narrative and shy away from it and hide under the desk. So looking back on the season and how it ended, would you have done it different when it came to the minutes of specifically Freddie and Pascal?
Well, I don't think we really had any issues with Pascal, right? I think he held up good. He was fresh. He looked great, you know, all year long. So that one that's never been even asked of me before, but I think you always ask you when the guy gets, you know, the guy that Freddie gets, you know, nicked up here and, you know, hurts his hip and, you know, maybe his groin or his hamstring or whatever, you know, whatever he was lugging around there, mostly the second half, you know, since the All-Star game. I mean, he kind of went to the All-Star game that way. You're going to get asked about that guy.
Right.
You know, I think that I certainly am going to try to plan things a little bit differently going forward. I don't sit here and regret it. I mean, you know, lots of talks with Freddie almost daily about, hey, are you good? Or can you want to keep going? And he wanted to keep fighting him. He's so competitive.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you got to help those guys from themselves, but I just felt like he was giving us enough. We were still playing great. We were, you know, our record since January was outstanding. But I think we got to think about that going forward. That's as honest as I can be with you. What is it? Well, we need to make sure we get him healed up, first of all, the right. best we can, our medical and strength and conditioning, get him in shape, you know, trim minutes here and there where we can, and then try to pace him a little bit more through the season, right. hopefully if we can.
But that's evolution and growth, right?
Like, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's evolution and growth, where you learn, and it's not as if Freddie can't articulate himself. Like, he's a pretty smart dude.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, he is such a team guy that he looks around and he's like, well, you know, who else is going to bring the ball? Who else is going to run the team? Who else is going to bring the ball to the floor? Man, I'm gonna go out there and sack. You know, even he wasn't putting up numbers. He was going out there trying to help us win, right? Mm-hmm. And, well, we've now probably found out since then in the last month of the season that, we, you know, when he missed a chunk of games that, you know, we're going to roll with Pascal and Scotty
right.
at the point.
Right. Okay, let's talk.
You know, and then, yeah.
Go ahead. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
I mean, I just think, again, we learned that, too. And if we probably would have known that was going to happen,
right.
you know, in the guts of the season, that we right. could just shift that so kind of seamlessly, that we probably would have been able to figure out a way to get him less minutes anyway. But, listen, sometimes you guys come in the best shape in the world. You limit all their minutes and blah, 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 and they end
Something
up,
happens.
You know, hurt and not playing anyway. Sometimes it's not anything anyone's done. It's just the breaks of the game, right?
I got you. I walked all over you because you mentioned Pascal and Scotty, and I wanted to get there before I let you go. Pascal makes 13 okay. All-NBA. I know you guys have butt heads in the past. I also know that the gem cannot be polished without friction, my friend. So what did it mean to you to hear Pascal get that kind of honor for the second time in his career?
Well, it's awesome. I think that, I'm going to say butting heads was a little strong. It was a very small incident and a growing incident for both of us. But I'm super happy for him. Like we've I think just in general, you know, Freddie, first-time All-Star, Scotty, Rookie of the Year, and Pascal, third-team All-NBA. That's a pretty good list of accolades for this team for this year.
Yeah.
That's some guys really playing and producing. You know, you got to produce to win those kind of awards over the season. So, I'm super happy for him, man. I'm, you know, Pascal's been great, coachable, fun to be around. He's fun to talk to now, and you know, all this stuff. And it's great to be able to, you know, call him up and say congratulations, man. I'm really happy for you. It's really something, man. Those are big, like that Rookie of the Year, that's a big award, man.
Yeah,
you know, 20-year, 25, 30-year, it's a big award, and so is all NBA. So, really super happy for Pascal.
I was high on the Scotty Barnes pick, and I said as much publicly, but even I was shocked at what he turned into. Like, what's the next step for Scotty Barnes?
Oh, he's just got to continue to assert himself. I agree with you. You know, you heard me say probably 20 times down the end of the course of the end of the year that it was shot. He was getting stronger physically as the games went. You know, he's supposed to be a rookie wearing down, 20-year-old. He's supposed to be hanging on for his life to get through his rookie. He was getting stronger and knocking people around and putting, you know, the ball in the basket and competing even harder. It's just going to be more of getting the ball in his hands more, letting his competitive spirit and drive and leadership kind of meld its way into this team and this organization. I mean, he's 20, man. The sky's the limit for him with that size and strength and love of the game and competitive spirit. Got a lot of things going for him.
Have you seen a player, like, is there a comparable? Like, I have a tough time finding, like, who that guy is for him, because he does so many things well and things that you don't normally attribute to a 20-year-old.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. He's got, he's got, again, I always say he's got a little bit of a quirky offensive game at the moment, yeah. right? You never really know what the heck he's going to do, you know, like from game to game. He's, yeah. You know, I mean, literally, he's got the, you know, I say he's got that look-away shot. You know, he'll be coming down on the fast break and he'll look at the corner and he'll, like, never look at the rim until the last second. And you're like, oh, I didn't have any idea he was going to shoot that. He was totally facing the wrong way. And then he'll go in and, you know, take it to the basket and score a bunch of three-footers. Then another game, he'll come out and shoot 9 threes. And then, you know, right. So he's kind of like, I think, still feeling his way through of who he is and what he's going to be. But I would say he should be, you know, you've heard me talk about trying to defend some of these great players. You got to defend everything. You got to defend them bringing it up the floor. You got to yep. defend them on the block. You got to defend the three. You got to defend them at the elbow. You got to defend them handling. You got to defend them setting screen and rolls in the middle, on the side. You know, you got to, I think he ought to set his sights on being able to try to crack you from every area on the floor, depending on what he sees on a certain night.
It's amazing that you can talk about a guy that young that way. Before I let you go, summer core team Canada. I want to talk a lot of Team Canada, but we've run out of time here. The okay. core was announced early this week. Big Canada Day game in the Hammer. That'll be fun. Yeah. How excited are you to kind of have a core to work with together?
Well, I'm super excited, and again, I keep telling everybody I've been hired to do the best job I can, and that's getting this team together and staying together over these next 3 years, I think, is like priority one. And we're still building this thing, right? We're still building this thing. So I'm glad we got to where we got to. It wasn't easy to get these guys to understand what we needed to do and commit to it. I give them tons of credit and kudos for it. Step one, there's about three or four more steps here before we get to where we're going. But it's what I'm after. I think we got to get guys to play together, even if we have to sacrifice some of the super, super top-end talent. I don't want to. Right. We love our super top-end talent to play together, but we'd rather have the same guys running out there for summer after summer or window after window, whatever it is, than not.
Right. Understood. Listen, I could talk basketball with you for an hour, but you wouldn't want that, and maybe the audience wouldn't want that, but I appreciate you doing it anyway.
No problem. I'll come on anytime you want me to.
Appreciate it,
we'll pick
Coach.
We'll pick it up from here.
Yeah, okay? For sure. Are you swinging the clubs this summer at all, or are you too busy to do any of that?
Hey, I played once. I went out to the – I'm surprised I didn't see you at the – maybe I missed you at the St. George's media thing. Were you there?
No, I was not there. I got a little boo-boo, and I have to work every single weekday. It kind of sucks for golf.
All right, well.
Next time.
I played one time.
That's a nice course to play, though, if it's your one time.
Oh,
yeah.
Gorgeous. It was cool. They were setting up the stands and everything. It, you know, felt like I was almost playing in a real tournament for a few holes.
Thanks, Coach. Be well. We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay. All right. Take care.
Bye. Head coach of the Toronto Raptors and Team Canada, Nick Nurse. And I've heard quite a player thank golf It's Friday, Jesse.
Really?
Yeah, I think you can play a little bit.
Have to dig deeper into that.
We'll shift our focus. Maybe we get him on the golf course and film that.
That's a segment.
And then that way we get the full hour and then we'll cut down to the good stuff. Maybe 4 hours.
It's such a good interview.
Quick break. Back with the Battle of Alberta next.
And now, time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe.
Going off.
Friends of the show.
Going off in here, sheepdogs. 5 minutes past the hour, but we shuffle things for the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse. Good conversation. I did like the answer on the Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam question, but that's also the evolution and growth around coaching certain players. Our evolution, our growth continues with our number two on Tim and Friends. Still to come, Dominic Moore will join us. We'll talk Stanley Cup playoffs with him. Eric Francis and Mark Spector together on the Battle of Alberta. So we'll put it all together for you. And speaking of, that's where we begin this hour. After three straight wins, the Oilers can close out the Flames in Calgary tonight if they make it four straight. Hockey Central starts 7 Mountain. Sportsnet West, Chris Tanev remains in the lineup for the Flames in this must-win, while Evander Kane will play a day after welcoming a new child into the world. All right, for more on tonight's game, let's head to Calgary. We'll check in with our guys, starting with Ryan Leslie. Mr. Leslie, how goes it?
Timmy, if I had a hand of cards, they'd be all aces. But the Calgary Flames, meanwhile, they've got some work to do. There is a nervous energy across this city, as you might imagine, being down 3-1 to Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. But this morning, it was their head coach, Daryl Sutter, who was taking it all in stride, talking just about how this team had such a good regular season that this is just another step in their journey.
When you're playing every other day, it's you know, you're doing a lot of work in-house with guys, so that's what's important, and our guys don't have any problem with that. We've done it all year. That's very simple. You don't win, what is it, 55 games. I mean, you think about it, you won 55 games this year, so it's pretty easy to get set for the next one. Maybe our guys are doing all they can. Maybe Edmonton's just doing a little bit better right now.
How about that? I mean, I thought that comment was pretty interesting this morning. Maybe the game within the game, continuing to praise the opponent, but he's not far off in terms of the way Edmonton has dominated of late. So you wonder if the psyche side of things continues to play in Edmonton's favor or maybe Calgary's. But either way, as you mentioned, Chris Tanev will stay in the lineup. And beyond that, we still don't know what it will look like just ahead of game time. But certainly we are in must-win category if you're the Calgary Flames, and they have been here before. So we'll see how it all plays out tonight.
Thank you very much, Ryan Leslie. And from Ryan Leslie, we go across the arena to Gene Principe. Yeah. Gino, what's going on?
Well, interesting to hear what Ryan had to say after what Daryl had to say this morning. And you wonder if this is, I'm not sure if it's called mind games. Maybe he's being honest, but certainly that would motivate his own team. As for the Edmonton Oilers, listen, they understand that Calgary in this building in this series has jumped out to 2-0 and 3-0 leads. While in Edmonton, it's been a different story. So that's something the Oilers certainly will be watching this evening. And it's hard to match desperation when you know in Calgary's case one loss and your season's done. One loss for Edmonton and they just go back to Edmonton and play another game, but then the pressure starts to push towards them. So it's something that Captain Connor McDavid, when it comes to desperation, wants to match the opposing team tonight.
Well, we're desperate to close the series out. That's how you match it. You know, we want to come out and have a strong performance and play our best game of the series and close the series out. You know, that's how we set our focus.
See, I told you, he said they wanted to match it. The one thing that was interesting this morning is Brett Kulak, who played for the Flames. Unbelievable career for this young guy. Just outside of Stoney Plain, Alberta, around Edmonton is where he's born. Played for Calgary, played for Montreal, playing.
Look out.
I think my time's. I think I passed the shot clock there, the word clock. Let me just quickly finish. Easy over there, Leslie. Brett Kulak said, you know, he was with the Montreal team last year that was down 3-1 to Toronto, came back to win that, beat the Jets, beat Vegas, and then was in the cup final. So that's something that, come on over, bud. Come on over. Just pat me down here. Dry me down a bit. I'm getting sweaty here. Yeah, thank you. It's the Italian. It's the Italian in me. Back to you guys.
All right, boys, we appreciate it. We know Nick Nurse kind of moved the times back, and you guys, live TV, appreciate both of you hanging around and doing this for us.
No problem.
All right, there is Gene Principe getting set for game number 5. And you could tell who had the home ice advantage among the reporters, eh? They do the horn on Gene. Ryan's
poor
clean
guy.
Here's the schedule for tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. First up, game 5, Rangers and Canes in Carolina. They haven't lost at home. That's 7 Eastern on Sportsnet Ontario. East and Pacific series tied at 2. Canes looking good at home. Then game 5 from Calgary. Hockey Central starts it off, 7 local, followed by the game on Sportsnet West and CBC. Sometimes it pays to surround yourself with smart people, and if they're smarter than you, even better. My next guest falls into the latter. Out of Harvard, like 15 or so seasons in the show. It's Dominic Moore. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. Dom, thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure to join you, Tim.
Canada buzzing about the Battle of Alberta. Are you surprised we're at 3-1 right now?
I am. I mean, just like I think everyone didn't expect the way this has gone. It's been remarkable. For me, like I covered the Oilers and the Flames in round one for ESPN. And, you know, it just seemed like the Flames, they had such a defensive series against Dallas and then just a total shift in what they have in round two. I just think they haven't really figured out how to play.
We're seeing video right now of Connor McDavid. How much of that has to do with that guy?
So it's uncanny. I can't underemphasize how phenomenal he's been. I mean, you look at basketball, okay, and in the playoffs, you see, you know, the way one player can take over a game. It just doesn't happen in hockey, right? It's the ultimate team sport. But McDavid has done that game in and game out throughout these playoffs. And, you know, I think back to one of the games they lost even that was maybe the most pronounced in that area. It was game five in the first round. He was just single-handedly put the team on his back, willed them through that game, and they still end up losing. He just keeps doing it. Night in, night out, it's truly, truly remarkable.
It is. I mean, we've brought up the names Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux when it comes to McDavid, and I've said numerous times, like, I didn't think we would ever get to that spot. Like, when you played in the league, those numbers seemed like fantasy numbers. Like, they would never happen again, and here we are in the postseason, and he's doing that type of thing. Dom, you've played in the postseason. Like, how hard is it to execute at that level at this time?
It's just so hard to do anything in the NHL individually. You know, it's such a team sport, especially in the playoffs. As you said, the game changes. All of a sudden, there's no room. There's no time. Teams aren't taking the risk that they did in the regular season. And not only that, they start to know your strengths and weaknesses and be able to key in on it. So he's getting even more attention focused than ever before on a nightly basis. And guess what? He's beating it all. It's truly impossible to understate this. No matter how much we talk about McDavid in the media on both sides of the border, I don't think we can do it justice. It's that remarkable.
So is there a counter besides Markstrom just playing better for the Calgary Flames?
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, Daryl Sutter's not a big line-matching guy. He spoke to us when we were there in Calgary about, you know, in this day and age, especially the forward groups, you can't really get the matchups you want, even at home. He tries to get his D out there more so often than not, but they don't have an answer to that top line at Edmonton. But certainly Markstrom in the goaltending has to improve. You know, the pedigree in the regular season was talked about, and we've seen some goalies have risen to the occasion in the playoffs, and their levels have gone up. Ottinger in the first round was a great example, and some have dipped. And so Calgary's unfortunately in that situation where their goaltending has dipped, but they simply need to find a way to rally around him and get the job done.
All right, we play this game on this show, Dom, called Super Stat or Meaningless Number, because we know that stats are like electric circus back in the day. They show a lot, but they don't show everything. So I'll ask you, is this a super stat or a meaningless number? Daryl Sutter is 8-1 in his last 9 elimination games. Is that a super stat or a meaningless number?
I think it's a super stat. There's got to be something about that. It's too, you know, black and white for there to be nothing to it.
All right, so if we move to the other series that we're watching tonight, and I know you spent some time in and around the New York Rangers, can you explain why the Canes are playing so good at home and on the road they have yet to win a game?
So my take on it is that the Canes are trying to play that perfect road game where you don't give anything up and you hunker down. And to be honest, like, you play too conservatively sometimes, especially for a team that, you know, they don't have a McDavid, they don't have a Draisaitl, but they do have a lot of skill, and their playmaking is what's been a strength of theirs throughout the regular season. You know, off the rush, they're making cross-ice passes in the offensive zone, getting open net looks. But in these road games, they're a little bit more hesitant to make that risky play. And to me, what that results in is lack of production and lack of wins.
You know, it's funny. In the opening round, I thought the Rangers caught an absolutely massive break, obviously, when Sidney Crosby went down, and it gave them the opportunity to find their legs and get past not only the Pens, but kind of get on a roll. And I thought that Igor Shesterkin was struggling a wee bit. And listen, this is the Vezina Trophy winner. There's no chance he does not win that award, leading the NHL in save percentage and goals against average. But Have we seen him kind of find his playoff legs in the last little while?
I think you hit the nail on the head. He definitely grew into this series. I think just mentally finding his footing, meeting the expectations that everyone had for him, and maybe they would have run out of time without Crosby going down there the way he did. You know, I give a lot of credit to Gerard Gallant. He just seems so focused on the player's confidence and staying positive, believing in them, even when things are going awry. He never throws anyone under the bus. He's always kind of resilient with the way he approaches his group. And the proof is in the pudding, the way they came back in round one, the way they've come back again in round two. And they just never think that they're out. And Gallant is a guy that truly believes in the mental side and the mentality of the players, but what's between their ears more so than the X's and O's. And I would say there's a few coaches that you could say the same about in this postseason.
You know, it's funny, the Canes go into this season, and obviously Freddie Anderson is a big part of what they're doing. I'm not going to ask you if we're going to see Freddie Anderson, but how much does that alter what you're attempting to do in the postseason? I know everyone says next man up, but can it truly be next man up?
I mean, it has to be. And the other part of it is that, you know, when you face challenges, you can't dwell on them. You just have to move on. And, you know, the worst thing you can do is think about woe is me. And, you know, we've seen all the championship teams, though, go through adversity. And, you know, Steven Stamkos was not a huge part of the Lightning's first Stanley Cup win. So they could have hung their excuses on that and didn't. I think they learned to be champions, and in the sense that there are no excuses. You can't blame the referees. You can't blame injuries. You have to focus on what you do have and being resilient and getting the job done.
Do you think the Battle of Alberta ends tonight?
No, I don't. I think that the Sutter 8-1 might go to 9-1. You know, McDavid, his quote there that you saw with Gene, where he's saying we want to close the series out, saying all the right things except for the fact that if it were me, I wouldn't talk about closing the series out, because that's a result. You have to focus on the process, and that is the first shift, the first minute of the game in the first period. Let the result take care of itself. We don't know what that's going to be.
Right.
It may be a closing the series out. It might not be.
Interesting. We'll be watching. Thanks, Dom. Appreciate you as always.
Always fun. Take care.
All right. There is Dominic Moore, ESPN, joining us here on Tim and Friends. All right, with millions of followers and content creator, you know the term content creator these days, eh, Jesse?
Are you
a content creator these days?
Yeah, I'm trying.
You know, content creator and NHL special advisor Josh Richards has teamed up with Bauer to invite everyone to play the game of hockey by building the ultimate backyard barn. I would like to create this maybe you and I could create this content.
You have a pretty good backyard barn right now.
I don't know if I got room for that backyard barn, because it's all part of Bauer's global campaign. The barn, a place where diversity is celebrated and everyone is welcome to play. The ultimate backyard barn. I'm in. Let's see it.
Dude, who sees blue nets? I don't know. I ain't never seen one before. I mean, guys, this is a sick little shooting area. You know what I mean? All right, let's run it. Barn's haunted.
Yo, what's up, guys? It's Josh Richards live from my barn. I'm testing out with Akil Thomas.
Well, it's pretty sick.
What makes hockey most unique is probably I learned so many life lessons, from how to carry yourself as a man, how to interact with others. I mean, I really want everyone to feel welcome to come and start playing hockey, just because it's a game like literally no other.
I think it's great for him to be involved with hockey, and obviously with Bauer, just trying to grow the game, and obviously a good Ontario boy, so I'm sure he loves the rink, and I'm sure he'll be out there working on his game.
Thank you guys for watching a little tour of my barn from Los Angeles. Thank you, Akil, for coming out and joining me. And I'll catch you guys next time.
That wasn't a barn. That was a mansion.
Yeah.
That was a really nice mansion.
He's a content creator.
Yeah, that is a content creator.
6.8 million followers on Instagram.
6.8 million followers on Instagram.
That's right. We're not quite there yet. We're trying, though.
Not quite.
Got to put in the work.
We're building up the brand.
Yeah, though. There you go. Exactly.
Time for a break. We'll get caught up on Canada-Sweden Barn Burner World Championships earlier today. Plus, a countdown to the Battle of Alberta continues right here on Tim and Friends.
It looks like all those followers is related to money for him, too.
Mm, yeah. Probably a good thing.
Good job by him.
Like, I want a shooting rink in my backyard. Mm. That's a pretty nice shooting rink.
Oh, you were saying, yeah.
It's a nice rink.
I didn't know your tone there.
For NHL Power Players, the initiative focused on selecting young hockey fans aged 13 to 17 to advise the league on the future of the NHL. Applications close June 1st, so apply now, hit the link on your screen, and you too could end up a content creator who can afford a mansion in Los Angeles.
Everybody wants one.
And a shooting
mansion and a barn.
Rink yeah. in the back. Man, the Flames will be hoping their Power Players deliver tonight as they try and extend the series and take the battle to Alberta. Back up Highway 2 to Edmonton for Game 6 on Saturday. Matthew Tkachuk says it's got to be a team effort on home ice tonight.
At this point in the series, we need everybody, and we've had everybody all year. We've have such a deep team, and you know, from Markey all the way out to all however many forwards and however many D, it's really has got to be a complete team effort if we're gonna, you know, get a win here tonight. So just start with one and use our home crowd, like I said earlier, to our advantage and get everybody going early and see what happens.
I mean, you look at it, they scored 7 goals in their last 3 games. Like, we could talk about Markstrom, which we have a lot, and the numbers are pretty damning. The goals against average, 5.28, if you weren't with us at the top of the show. Save percentage, 8.50 in this series. But when you score 7 goals in 3 games against the Edmonton Oilers, you're not going to win a lot of those. And especially when you scored 9 in game 1. Like, you look at the Stars, Gaudreau, 0 points in his last 2 games. Flames are 0-3 when Gaudreau doesn't have a point. Tkachuk, 0 points in his last 2 games. Like, you just look around this team and you know that there is better in there. It's just whether or not they can unlock it.
Players talking cliches all the time. We had Lucic's answer yesterday. That was a cliche answer from Tkachuk, complete team effort. But that's the truth. Like, that's legitimately what they need tonight. They need the Stars to get going. They need the third line hasn't scored a goal 5-on-5 either. And they need Markstrom to be better. So you really do need a complete team effort if you're going to get a victory tonight.
Especially against the Oilers, the way they're playing right now. And I have a feeling that that has a little part in your next script.
Well done, Timmy. We are continuing to count down to the Battle of Alberta. Let's take a look at the odds powered by BetRivers. It's a whole new game. Download the BetRivers online casino and sportsbook app today. And as Timmy alluded to, before game one, we saw Connor McDavid was essentially even money to get 2 points or more in the game. We were like, what?
I was shocked. How is that? I was more shocked than you were. So don't take the hit on this one. I was shocked that you were basically getting even money if the dude got 2 points, thinking, well, you know, like, 2 points, that's a lot. He's had a multi-point game in every one of these games.
Which is exactly why he is now a minus 143 to score at least 2 points tonight, which is crazy. Plus 110.
So we're expecting multi-point games from the guy who has put up more multi-point games to this point in the postseason than anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, they shut down Connor McDavid last game and he had 2 points.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your answer. Let's go to the next thing here. We look at 2 of the 4 games in the series so far. Have finished 5-3 Oilers. So if we want to look at that score on BetRivers, we look at it now plus 3,500. So 35-1 if you get the 5-3 score correct, which did happen and is why we gave away a hoodie for the hashtag TF Predict. So that's 3,500 odds on that. A $3 bet would net you over $100. And there was also a house special that I want to get your opinion on.
Okay.
A lot of you hear Dom Moore talk about, he probably thinks that the Flames are going to get a victory tonight. But if you think the Oilers are going to win and the over is going to be over 6.5, which based on this series probably will be, includes overtime, you can get a that number at plus 320 for more than almost, 6.5 goals.
It almost seems like if the Oilers are going to win, it's going to be a high-scoring game. And for me, if the Flames are going to win, it will be a lower-scoring game, right? Yeah. Like, it feels to me like if the Flames play well enough to win, it'll include Markstrom being able to shut down someone. And I don't know what that means. They also won a 9-6 game in this series. So maybe I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But it feels like if the Flames are going to win, Markstrom's going to have to play
well. Well, you just think of the reputation that Calgary had coming in. They've shown you all regular season that they are, you know, the top line scores a lot. They score a lot 5-on-5. But their identity is defense. One of the stingiest teams in the league. That a lot of that comes from their head coach.
Right.
But they have been anything but throughout this series. And when you lose your identity like that, you're going to have a difficult time winning hockey games. That's what we've seen.
Without a doubt. All right. Time for a break. More in the Battle of Alberta coming up. Eric Francis, Mark Spector will join us from Calgary. We'll get the two sides. What are the keys for the Flames to get back in the series? And how can they possibly slow down Connor McDavid? And would they bet the over? We'll discuss all that. Tim and Friends.
How could you not?
Right here.
Seriously. I think I'm going to sprinkle.
Short-handed breakaway, Zach Hyman scores! For the first time in the series, Edmonton has the lead. It's a break for Draisaitl. Leon Draisaitl scores! Back-to-back breakaway goals. The series dead even. Battle of Alberta has reconvened to its northern front in what's become a best of five. McDavid turning away from Hannafin to the net in front. Another Sportsnet Central. Connor McDavid moment. Check up his Kane again. Evander Kane scores. Hat trick goal. The Oilers now have the lead in the series. Game four. Another rabid crowd at Rogers Place. It's Evander Kane scores. 11 for Kane and a 3-0 Edmonton lead. Goal scores from long range. And Calgary's tied it in the most unlikely fashion. Lucian Brock scores! And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has put the Oilers ahead again.
It's back to Calgary with a 3-1 lead for the Edmonton Oilers.
Three straight wins for the Edmonton Oilers, and now, tonight, a chance to reach the conference final for the first time since their legendary cup run in 2006. Rookie head coach Jay Woodcroft knows the Flames will bring their A game tonight, trying to avoid elimination.
I think anytime you, as a series moves forward and the games become more precious, you expect both teams to have their best, and certainly we know they'll be prepared. But as I've said all along here in our messaging, we're worried about us. We're worried about making sure that we're playing our best game of the series today.
Special players make special plays on special days and special series. Call for special guests. Nice. Both sides of the Battle of Alberta. Covered all season long by my next two guests, Mark Spector and Eric Francis. They join me at the same time. It's lovely. What up, fellas? Welcome back to Tim and Friends.
Jimmy. Good to see you, my man.
Good to see both of you guys.
It's not so good to see him, though. I keep seeing him way too much.
You guys are in each other's grill a lot. Almost as much as Leslie and Principe. Almost.
Never heard of them.
All right, let's jump in with the keys to game five. In your mind, we'll start with the visiting analyst in this one. Mark, what are you thinking most about heading into game five?
When you're the team for whom it's been going right, you just need everything to stay the same, right? You're not getting anything different out of the Oilers. You know, the guys that are supposed to produce have all produced here. Right. The goalie who's, you know, been winning the goalie battle. They want him to keep winning the goalie battle. And the, you know, the resilient team that had 132 foot goal scored against them and turned around and won the last 9 minutes of the game. That's the one they want to see show up on the ice tonight. Won't see much different from the Oilers. This series, boys, it's all about the Flames making some changes here.
All right. So what are those changes? What are the keys in your mind, Eric?
Well, they got to possess the puck. I mean, that's always been the Flames' game. You know, people make the mistake of saying that the Calgary Flames are a great defensive team. Well, no, Daryl Sutter hates that term. It's all about possession. It's all about you can't score on our net if we have the puck in your zone. And they're not able to establish much of a forecheck. The top line hasn't been very good. Obviously, Markstrom's been subpar compared to what he's used to. There are a lot of things that have been going wrong for the Calgary Flames. But I got to tell you, Daryl Sutter came out after that last game, and he wasn't grinning, but he was pretty close to it. He wants to exude confidence. And there's every reason to believe that this team could still fight off at least one elimination game and push this back to Edmonton. I think there's a lot of confidence in that room. I know there's a lot of confidence in this city. And I personally believe they're going to come out and play their best game of the series because this team just has shown that all year long. They just don't go four losses in a row very often. I think it only happened once this year.
All right. So if it's going to be four losses, Mark, there have been a bunch of names that maybe Kellen Holland in the past has been listen, I'll put my hand up. I thought you needed a better goalie in Edmonton at the deadline. There were signings like CeCe. There were signings like Barry that people looked at and criticized the GM about. Which one of these moves, and I'm leaving one out, it's Vander Kane, everyone knows it, but which one of these moves has been the most surprising help in this series?
Oh, I don't know if I have one. The one that was criticized the most was Duncan Keith.
Right.
Making $5 million bucks here, just over. This one, when he got Duncan Keith from Chicago and couldn't get the Blackhawks to keep some salary, Duncan Keith has become that player that a lot of Oilers fans, they don't like him, not because of how he plays, but because of what he makes.
Right.
And they got him as a guy that was going to, he's going to be a second pairing left side defenseman. Okay, we knew that. Here's what we never figured out. He's going to play the season with Evan Bouchard. And for the rest of Evan Bouchard's career, Bouchard's going to be a better player because he spent his first two seasons in the NHL playing next to a Hall of Fame player. Okay, we didn't think that through.
Right.
The other thing is, the analytics people laughed at the intangible. What's Duncan Keith going to bring to your team, right? When we bring in this guy that's won three cups in Chicago, all intangibles. And that's a buzzword for that ignites the analytic community because you can't measure it, right? There's no way to quantify what Duncan Keith's doing when he doesn't have the puck, when he's not on the ice. Well, all of those things, I'm not saying he's stirred the drink here, but he's been a really good defenseman. Evan Bouchard's come miles as his partner. And at times like the other night, when, things were ugly and the puck's going in from another time zone, guys like Duncan Keith, all of a sudden, this is a team that can take a punch. And all the other players are giving Duncan Keith credit for that. So I guess we should be giving Ken Holland a little bit of credit for that, too.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think there's some hindsight being 2020 on some of these moves. And if, in fact, they close out this series, there might be some back padding for Ken Holland. So as you bring up Evan Bouchard and Duncan Keith and that defense core, it was interesting to me to see game one and how that played out and how many goals we saw, because I thought, okay, Edmonton wants to play this wide open game and they may have bitten off a little more than they can chew. But in the last few games, Eric, this Calgary team hasn't been able to score. Is there a little bit of a crisis in their identity right now?
Well, I think so. I mean, their identity was, great goaltending, the ability to play low-scoring games effectively and win those, and also having the top line in hockey. And statistically, they were by quite a bit. And they have been silenced the last two games. And, all eyes are on them to see how they respond tonight. They are the face of this franchise. Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau, Jacob Markstrom, and all three of them are, I'm not going to say they're faltering, but they're not the difference makers that they were all season long as this team won the Pacific Division. So they're going to need better efforts from all three of them to not just prolong the series tonight, but if they're going to have any hope of pushing this, into a sixth or seventh game, all those ingredients are going to have to be, a lot better than they have been all series long.
Mark, are you surprised at how much they've been able to be held in check?
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to disagree with Derek. with Eric. Those guys.
And Eric. Right? Eric Ryan always opens his mouth too much. Yeah, I understand.
Sorry about that. those guys haven't got the job done. Let's talk about who's producing it. This ain't minor hockey where we're giving out participation ribbons here, boys. This is Stanley Cup playoffs. So when Zach Hyman gets a breakaway on Jacob Markstrom, he buries the puck. How many breakaways has Johnny Gaudreau had in this series? Hasn't buried a puck, barely, right? Matt Tkachuk, you know, guys are finding a way. Evander Kane's finding a way. He's getting a whole bunch of goals. I get it. Backdoor tap-ins and stuff. I find Markstrom is having less chance on goals. To me, Markstrom's getting failed by his team. He's getting beat on two-on-ones. He's getting beat on breakaways. That's an excuse for Markstrom. I can get that. Don't ask me why Matt Tkachuk was invisible for two games in Edmonton. If Matt Tkachuk's not scoring, he should be putting on the black hat in the Battle of Alberta and stirring things up the way he always did. And from that came success for the Flames. He didn't do anything in Calgary in 3 and 4. Their best player, maybe, didn't do a thing for two games. Can't have that.
Francis?
Yeah, and I just want to jump in there because I agree. Markstrom's getting a bit of a bad rap.
Yeah.
I guess when I say Markstrom's, you know, let them down, it's because he's not making, you know, that extra huge save that they need at key times in the game. By my count in this series, and there have been a lot of goals scored on him, but by my count, only three were bad ones. Unfortunately for the Flames, the biggest one of the series came in 21 seconds into game four, the pivotal game of the series so far, and he coughs it up, and that's all on him. You can't blame anybody else but him on that. He just wasn't ready to start that game. But other than that, a lot of these goals are because of the brilliance of McDavid. I'm with you. Mark, I think you could have scored several of the goals that Evander Kane has scored so far this year. And I've seen you play beer league, let me tell you. It's just an amazing performance. At the end of the day, when we look back at this series 5 years from now, the narrative to me, whether it ends tonight or game six or seven, the narrative to me is going to be, this was the time when Connor McDavid stood up and said, I am one of the greatest players this game has ever seen, and I'm going to show you why.
Mark?
I can't argue much with that, but I guess I want to say that I remember an Oilers team that had McDavid and Draisaitl, and they were both pretty good, and they couldn't win a game against Winnipeg last year, right? They got swept.
Right.
So you know, you're never going to catch me doing two things, right? Underestimating McDavid. I've tried it. It doesn't work. saying he can't do something, right? McDavid will never do that. I've tried that. It's pure stupidity. But I think, you know what, the Flames wouldn't be smart to say McDavid's the only guy hurting us here. There's a bunch of guys hurting them. And yeah, it's going to take more than one guy to stand up here. The Flames need a team to show up here. They need about five or six. Whatever happened to the depth scoring, whatever happened to a whole bunch of things, it ain't one guy that's beating them, and it's not one guy that's going to fix it for Calgary.
Yeah, it's also like the numbers that I never thought we would be in a spot where we were talking about a guy with Mario and Gretzky, and that's what we're doing with McDavid in a time when we're not scoring that many goals. All right, so before I let you go, one of the most intriguing things coming into this series for me was the coaching contrast. You've got the wily veteran on one side, you've got the rookie head coach on the other. You guys talk to the coaches all the time. What's been your reaction to the matchup of the coaches? We'll start with Mark.
Well, I've known Darryl for a long time. Yeah. I covered him when he played. Darryl, I like to call him the agrarian contrarian because when he wins, he's mad. And when he loses, So he kind of acts happy, right? When you ask a smart question, he treats it like it's a dumb one. And when sometimes you ask a dumb one, Eric's really good at that. He gets a great answer. So Daryl's a tough read. He's always been a tough read.
Yeah.
And you know what? The young guy, I guess I'm going to say this and I'll let Eric talk. To me, you measure coach by how much he gets out of all his guys. And no one's going to disagree on who's getting more out of more guys. Right now, Woodcroft's got his team ticking along. Let's see if Darryl can figure it out. He's running out of time.
Okay, here's the dumb question. Is it really a dumb question when it gets a great response? That's what we can chew on that later. Anyway, I've been practicing all year long on that one.
Yeah. All year.
There's no way. There are people in this series who are going to sit here and say Darryl Sutter's getting out coached. And I've always thought that that's way too simplistic a way to look at a team when it loses a series. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Darryl Sutter's getting out-coached. Now, is he, you know, pushing all the right buttons and making this team play to its capabilities? No, he's not. But I'm not putting that on Darryl Sutter. You want to put something on Darryl Sutter? You could throw at me, well, did you play Markstrom too much this year, 63 games? Was that too much? Is that maybe why he's not standing on his head like he did all year? That's a discussion I'm willing to have. But in terms of going mano a mano, I think that's a fool's errand to sit there and try and guess who's been the better coach. We know that Daryl Sutter's numbers tell you. He's one of the best coaches we've seen in a long, long time in the National Hockey League. And Woodcroft has been a formidable addition to the National Hockey League as a head coach over the last 2.5, 3 months, whatever. Like, give him full marks for turning that franchise around.
Right.
But I think I don't really want to say one guy's better than the other in this series.
I just thought the contrast was real interesting. What Speck meant was Derek asked dumb questions. I think he was saying that it was Derek who asked that question. Yeah.
My alter ego.
Eric, Mark, appreciate you. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll see if we get a game six back in the other city. Appreciate you, boys.
All right, Timmy. I'll see you in Edmonton back on Saturday.
There it is. Francis Spector right here on Tim and Friends. Time for one last break. We will get to last call, then it's off to Carolina for the Rangers and Canes. That's coming up next on Sportsnet. It's Rubinoff, and then it's game five from Carolina. I've been told there are 3.5 minutes left in my work week, Jesse Rubinoff. You've got last call. I am off tomorrow.
I will be here.
Jesse Rubinoff will be here tomorrow. I will be watching baseball and hockey as I try and be a decent dad.
Can't blame me for that one.
No.
Not at all. I will rifle through these so we can get some of your answers before you end your work week. The CFL and the CFLPA have reached a tentative agreement on a new collective bargaining agreement. The players are expected to vote on the new deal today. Last week, the players rejected a tentative agreement reached by the league and the PA. Do you think they'll approve this one?
They better. I mean, listen, I don't know enough about this deal. I've been trying to search for the information. It sounds like 6 versus 7 Canadian starters is a big part of what the problem was before and what the problem with the new deal was. I can't figure out whether or not this new deal is with 6 or 7 Canadian starters. And that's the whole point of the league, is that it is Canadian and that you should have, at least in my mind, if you're selling football, of a different kind, you should probably put Canadians in the game. So there's always been this kind of like fracture in the PA between the American players and the Canadian players. The American players are here to make money, so they just want the money. And the Canadian players are trying to protect what was a Canadian league a little bit more, and understanding that if there are more Canadians, it makes them more valuable. So CFL always tries to shove that wedge in there. I think that's why you saw the first one not get ratified. And now it'll be real interesting to see. If they vote this one down again, you might need a change in leadership with the CFLPA's executive committee. Because if they're saying okay to these things and their membership is shutting them down, it's a bad thing. I hope we get CFL football soon.
Very informative answer to close out your work week, but we're going to try and get one more here. As we mentioned earlier, the Jays opening a 4-game series against the Angels tonight, and there will be a familiar name in the broadcast booth as Ben Schulman, son of Dan, will have the radio call, along with friend of the show, Ben Nicholson-Smith, filling in for Ben Wagner. When can we expect to see your son filling in for you, Timmy?
Well, Sean McKenzie is kind of my son, and he is filling in tomorrow. I mean, I sun him on the regular when he comes on the show.
No doubt.
And he is host. I shouldn't treat the next host of this show like that. My son, not tomorrow, I can tell you that, because we got hockey and baseball, 2 tournaments. We're doing them both, and I've decided that I'm going to go and watch all of this tomorrow.
In the same day?
Hockey, baseball, same day, as long as it doesn't rain in the GTA.
Well, good luck with that. Forecast does not look good. We are just minutes away from sending you to Game 5 between the Rangers and Canes on Sportsnet East Ontario and Pacific. The series is tied at 2, and the home team has won every game so far. The home team has also won every game in the Canes' first-round series with the Bruins. They did. Carolina is now 6-0 at home and 0-5 on the road in the postseason. Is there any reason to believe that changes tonight?
The one thing that worries me is goaltending, and Igor Shesterkin kind of sleptwalked through that opening round, a little nerves, I don't know what you want to call it, but they caught a little bit of a break when Sidney Crosby got hurt. He may have found his sea legs in the postseason, and that might change
tonight. That's trouble.
If that is the case, Carolina's in trouble. That does it for us. Rangers and Canes coming up next on Sportsnet East Ontario and Pacific. Hockey Central, 7 Mountain, that's 7 local in Alberta on Sportsnet West, followed by Game 5 in the Battle of Alberta, Mavs Warriors Game 5, Sportsnet 360, Jays Angels later on Sportsnet 1. I'm off tomorrow. Sean McKenzie's got your back. Enjoy the games. They'll talk to you tomorrow.